Aloha. Welcome to the Live Ukulele Podcast. My name is Brad Bordessa. Thank you for tuning in today. In this episode, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the school of hard knocks and also putting yourself out there. This is something I was talking to our drummer Nick about the other day. Just the benefit of having somebody there to kind of guide you and straighten you out in the moment. And sometimes they provide feedback that you never even knew that you were missing, never knew you needed. And so just talk about the value of that kind of thing. Before we get started, next week, Saturday, on the 27th of April, 2024, I'm going to be hosting a Zoom workshop about movable ukulele chord shapes. And we're just going to talk about the basics of taking a chord shape, moving it around the neck, how to locate things, and how to play in zones on the neck and start to kind of understand the purpose of a chord shape and why you might want to, you know, have a library of them in your mind that you can call upon, and, you know, why you would use them in one situation and maybe not another. It's an hour of instruction and then a half hour of question and answer. And if you can't make it, you can still join and watch the replay after the workshop has concluded. I'll post up a video containing the replay of the same content so you can check it out on your own time. If you're interested in registering, you can go to liveukulele.com/store. It's right at the top. Just click on register and you can jump in and join us there on April 27th. It's going to be at 10 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time. We'd love to see you there. Hope you can make it. And like I said, if you can't, there's always the replay option. And if the workshop isn't your jam, you can still go to liveukulele.com/store. Check out any of my number of premium lessons and ebooks and stuff. Anything that you purchase over there goes directly to support the work that I do here on Live Ukulele. And you get a top-notch ukulele learning resource. With that said, sit back, relax, and hope you enjoy the episode. So my band, Kingside, had a late gig the other night. We played down at the Blue Dragon in Kauai High. It was a fun show. We really played our socks off and had a good time. It was a good show. We felt good about how it went. But it's like one of the latest shows that we play. So we were up at, 10:30 or whatever, just hanging out, kind of decompressing, hanging out, cruising. Some of the guys were having some drinks, that kinds of stuff. And we were talking story. I was talking to our drummer, Nick, and he was talking about the opportunity he had to go tour Oahu with Johnny Nichols when he was part of the Honoka'a Jazz Band, when Nick was in the jazz band, and how the drummer for Johnny Nichols was, kind of there. I guess the jazz band opened for Johnny at a number of gigs across the period of a week, maybe a little more. And so this drummer was able to kind of watch Nick and, give him advice and groom. And the one example that Nick gave was that, I guess, he had a wooden snare and he was using metal wires to hold the snares on the bottom of the drum. And the drummer mentor guy there was like, "Oh my gosh, what are you doing? You don't do that. That is going to put a ding on the bottom of your wood hoops and you're going to have a line etched into your drum where the metal wires are. You should just use string, like something that's softer on the wood." And he had some in his pocket and he pulled them out and they changed the wires out so that the snare springs were held on by this alternate material. And Nick was like, "I never knew that. I would have had no idea that that was ever a thing if this guy hadn't told me and saw firsthand what I was doing and helped me correct it in that moment. And that got me thinking to a lot of my background and the opportunities that I've had to kind of be in the flow and exist with people who are much better musicians than I am, and to get those kinds of lessons practically given to me. That's gifted to me, because it's a gift, really, because those kinds of lessons are the kind of thing that will take you a long, long time to figure out on your own. Whereas if you get the direct feedback while in the moment, it might be kind of like, oh, I'm not doing it right. And it doesn't maybe feel the best, but you appreciate it down the road, because that's something that it was just like a total kind of like a cheat code for what you're doing in that moment of being able to level up and take your music and your craft to another level because they gave you that information. And I remember, I can't remember if I've shared this on the podcast before or not, but when I was in the Institute of Hawaiian Music, we had a weekly gig at the Fairmont Kealani in Wailea, kind of South Kihei, Maui. And we'd play in the lobby, we'd set up, we'd get there, they had a sound guy, and I don't know, this was some arrangement that they had with the program where we would, you know, we provided a band for them to play. It was like a midday thing, just right in the lobby, provide music for them with some sort of a band. And the rotation of whoever could make it always changed. I was pretty much always there because I was always available. But I think they tried to, change who had the opportunity depending on availability. But what I remember most from that gig wasn't necessarily like playing in a big fancy hotel lobby and the music that we played. I don't remember that so much. I mean, it was fine. I remember enough to know that it was like early career bad and cringy. We were all just really kind of getting things figured out. But Uncle George Kawamoku would sit in the back. He had his chair and he would look like he was playing on his phone the whole time. He was just watching his phone, like the whole entire gig. He never even looked at us. But what I later found out, after the first gig, seeing him do that, I was like, why is Uncle George tuned out? He must be like planning a tour or something on his phone. He was taking notes the whole time. Taking notes. And so we received these notes after that first gig that we played there. And, I think Uncle George, he was kind of like the legit dude to bring us in. It's like Uncle George played a couple songs. It's like, okay, we're going to welcome the students from the Institute of Hawaiian Music. And he kind of let us loose and got off stage and went and sat in the back. And then he came on and played Hawaii Aloha with us or whatever. But those notes were brutal. Not in a mean way, but just like having that third party who was watching us and paying attention to all the things that we could improve upon. When you're in the moment, you don't necessarily realize that there's a problem with what you're doing. In fact, a lot of times you're up on stage like, yeah, it sounds awesome. We're totally shredding. It's great. And Uncle George was there in the back providing us with these notes of feedback, like pages of notes typed on his iPhone. And it was just bullet points, just moving through, like Brad, your singing's flat. Or, Wahine Ilikea going into XYZ song wasn't a good transition. Or, your stage presence was weak during this song. Or you need to work on an arrangement for this song. You need to have a better intro and outro. Just like kind of bullet point sorts of things that were really kind of popped our balloons. I think the first time that we got them, we all saw each other the next day at class or whatever. It's like, oh my God, did you see the notes? Like, I didn't think we were that bad. But looking back, I realized that was such a huge game changer as far as getting good fast and improving quickly, because that was a weekly gig. We got those notes every week for a couple of months at least. And it was awesome. It was brutal and awesome. And it was some of the most valuable input that I've ever gotten, because we were able to take all the things that Uncle wrote down. Okay, so I got to work on my singing. Okay, that thing. Okay. You need to, you know, not wear white socks with your black slacks. Okay, I can go buy black socks, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly the stuff. I really wish that I could find the notes. I don't know if, I think they're probably on the UH system and they've long since been deleted because we've been out of IHM for over a decade now. But we would work on these things slowly and surely every single gig. We would come back and we'd look, okay, we worked on this one thing. We addressed this bullet point and this bullet point and this bullet point, and then we'd get a fresh batch. And in that way, Uncle George was really helping to kind of groom us and help us understand where we were falling short, what could be better, how to be better performers, how to put on a show, how to be professional, all that kinds of stuff. And it was huge. It's a really big deal. And I don't think I can possibly overstate how big of a deal it was to have that kind of feedback. And granted, I am very blessed to have had the experiences I have with the wonderful mentors that I've had over the years, you know, having access to people who are there sitting in the back and engaged enough with, you know, interested enough in my ability and my career and my future to take the time to take those notes. Like, that is just, that is wonderful. And I, you know, I'm always going to be in debt to Uncle George for that input that he shared with us. But I also think that there's a part of us that could have turned away from that. Like, and I think that probably at the beginning we did, like, we had that first like meeting after we got the notes, like, oh, that's so unfair. It's like, that's not so. And then, you know, the more you sit with it, you realize, oh God, yeah. I mean, if it can be any better, we should work to make it better. Like, that's our craft. That's what we're supposed to do. Is like, if we realize there's something that we can do better, we should be improving that. It's one thing to not realize that you're messing up or not realize that you're falling short on something. That's one thing. But to knowingly go out there and continue to do something that Uncle wrote in his notes was like, eh, maybe don't do that anymore. That was huge. And so we ended up taking that advice and internalizing it and working on it. And I think that it's easy to turn away from that kind of thing where you have the harsh criticism, because in that situation, I just saw something the other day of somebody who learned at university how to give criticism, where you say something nice and then you give the criticism nicely, but then you follow it up with another compliment so that it's like a, you know, compliment sandwich with the criticism in the middle. And that was definitely not the case with Uncle George's notes. To be fair, he did, you know, give us credit when credit was due, and was like, good ukulele solo, Axel, or, you know, good stage presence, Adam, whatever it was that we were working on, he would give credit. And that was also helpful as well, because then you had a barometer for not just like, oh, we suck so bad. It's like, okay, this was a win and this was not a win. And we could go from there and move forwards. But it's very easy to, especially when you're so invested emotionally in something as music, it's easy to back away. It's easy to like put up your shields and say like, oh no, that's not, no, who are you to give me advice? Like, not everybody has Uncle George out there on the phone. It might be just Joe Blow. And I've had situations like that as well, where somebody would say like, oh, that was great, but like, I couldn't hear you singing. You were too quiet compared to the rest of the band or something. And I'm thinking in my head, like, I was singing my ass off. I was like, how could you not have heard me? Like, it must have been the electric guitar was too loud or something, like figuring out a way to blame it instead of turning it around and being like, okay, how do I humble myself and internalize this? Because my experience is valid, but her experience is also valid. And if she couldn't hear me, that's something that I, as the musician, in, you know, my capability, I need to be able to be aware of that at future performances, whether it's, hey, electric guitarist, you really got to turn down. I mean, that goes about as well as everybody would always expect, usually. Or I need to sing louder, or I need to ask the sound guy, hey, can you turn me up in the mains? They're saying that they can't hear the singing in the back. Like singing right on the microphone, that took me a long time to learn. That's a hard thing to do. I can give you that bit of advice right here, right now. If you don't feel the microphone with your lips, you're not singing close enough. Period. End of story. Unless you are like a Broadway singer and you're really super piping to hit a note, then it might, you know, you might back away from the mic a little bit. But for 99% of people, normies, you know, normal singers like myself, you got to be right on that mic. Otherwise, they can't hear you. In this case with the podcast, you know, I'm not right on the mic because I control the mixing. I can bring that stuff up in post. But when you're live, you can only turn it up so much before it starts to feed back or you have any number of problems. It's way better for everybody if you just put your lips on the mic. And not just performing, not just singing. When you're talking anywhere, if you're at a wedding and somebody hands you a microphone, put your lips on the microphone. Kiss it. You gotta project into the microphone. That's how it works. It's a limited technology and you have to help it out. Anyways, rant over. But that was a moment where I pushed back. I was like, no, I was super singing loud. Like the guitarist was loud in my ear. Like I couldn't hear myself because the guitar was playing too loud. And I was kind of griping to my friend who I was jamming with at that gig, who was not the guitar. He's a guitarist, but he wasn't the guitarist. And he was kind of like, I don't know, bro. It's kind of like, that's like, you know, you're kind of being a little bit ego action talking in that way. Like, you know, you got to internalize that stuff and just take it. You don't have to like it, but you take it and go from there. And so that was good. I'm glad he called me on that. And he, you know, made me realize that in the effort to pursue the craft to a better degree, you have to do some of these things. If you just always ignore and you always like put your ego first, you're just not going to get some stuff. You're not going to get to that next level because you're just not going to learn those lessons, no matter how many times somebody might tell you. Granted, there are people who should not be giving you feedback and advice, people who are, you know, the know-it-all types. You know the type. And sometimes you have to take it with a grain of salt because they're just the kind of people who are like always going to know something more than you, even if they're wrong. And, you know, you just take it with a grain of salt and you move on. But for the most part, especially when you have opportunities to play with other musicians or for musicians or people who have a decent amount of experience in their field. You know, if it's somebody who is like, oh, it's another musician, I'm kind of nervous now because I know that this person is in the room watching or whatever. That's probably an indicator that is the kind of person who you should at least be open to feedback from, if not to seek them out and say, hey, what did you think? You know, maybe I played my song at the open mic night and, you know, how did I do? What could I improve? And some people are better at giving critiques than others. Hopefully they will be nice about it. Hopefully they will give you a compliment sandwich with the critique nicely in the middle. But as a musician, I think that that's a growing point for a lot of people. I'm kind of a shy dude. I had to get over myself a little bit in order to be a better musician. That was part of the journey. Part of the learning experience was like, you don't get to just ignore this stuff because it's uncomfortable, because you don't want to talk to people or you don't want to engage with them as much. Part of the job. You got to do it, and you might as well do it as well as you can. Take what you can get out of it and go from there, because you'll be a better person and a better musician for it. And so I know that I'm talking specifically here about performing, but it goes for a lot of things, and it goes for like even just life stuff. I think it's a good thing to at least be aware of and pay attention to, is that You know, it might not be nice, but sometimes there are things that you just need to hear, and there's lessons that you need to hear. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, a partner or something saying, you know, you're kind of blowing it in this way, or I need you to do X, Y, Z or whatever. And it's not comfortable, but I think that everybody experiences music in different ways. Everybody enjoys music in different ways. Some people will never play on stage because that's not why they play music. They just play it for their own personal enjoyment. But I think that anybody who's interested in improving the craft and expanding and, you know, progressing through the discipline of music, that it's something to be aware of. It's something to really pay attention to. And like I said, to seek out. Not everybody's going to have Uncle George in the back on their iPhone taking notes. Sometimes you're going to have to reach out. And this is something that I've learned too, is that you ask people, like, how does it sound? Because you would rather be able to fix it in the moment. Like I'm thinking for a gig, you set up, you do sound check, and then you've got a little break or whatever. You go ask the guy who's like sitting over there, like in your zone, like, hey, did it sound okay? We're not too loud, are we? That kind of a thing is really important, because they might give you feedback that will help you be better in the moment. Because if you can fix something with the sound system or fix something with, I mean, and once again, you can't take advice from everybody, because if you're playing a gig and somebody's there who's just a bummer and they don't like ukulele players or whatever, it might just be a bummer. And you have to accept that certain people just are like that. It's nothing you have to do with it. It's just them. But for the most part, if, you know, people are fairly positive and they will give you feedback, because most people listen to music. They know what sounds decent. And I'm talking specifically here about like a sound system. But especially when you get in a room full of musicians, or your musician friend, or your jam buddy, or whoever it might be, you know, open the door for critique. Allow them to give you feedback. People like to, and this is not why I've ended up in this profession of education and teaching, but people like to hear themselves talk and to tell you what they think. Right? That's just kind of a human thing. That's a tendency. It's like, oh, tell me about your trip to Italy. And people, oh, we love to talk about our trip to Italy. Da 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 da. They'll go on and on and on about it, because that's a nice thing in a conversation, is to get to talk about yourself a little bit. So, and that goes for like a critique experience. If I go and I play for a room of people, and then I ask somebody afterwards, like, what did you think? Did you think that song was a good choice for this? Or however you frame it, whatever piece of data that you want to walk away with, I'm sure they would love to give you feedback, because people like to share and hear themselves talk and give you their impressions. It makes them feel special that you asked and that you care to hear their experience of whatever thing. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves and our teachers for learning experiences. Like, I think that most people would say that I'm learning music. I'm learning from my ukulele teacher, right? I am practicing myself for all these things. And you don't necessarily think that there could ever be a third party that you could learn something from, just because, you know, granted, unless, you know, outside of a room full of musicians, there might not be anybody who has super good feedback for music outside of, oh, the sound system sounds too harsh and tinny and you're too loud. Like, that's basic stuff that you can fix in the moment. But as far as like musical performance kinds of critiques, if you have access to a specialized person who can give you that feedback, it's a nice idea to seek it out. And most people are going to be enthusiastic. Most people are going to be positive. Most people are going to tip their hats to you for sharing your music, for playing for them, you know, or playing for a large group. Maybe you're just playing for the one person. But then you can always try and mine more information from other people's experiences. And I think that that is super duper valuable. I'll leave with one of my most memorable Uncle George critiques. I ended up getting a Kamoa electric Hoss semi-hollow body ukulele. They made them for a while, you know, over a decade ago. I really wanted one. I was in touch with the guy at Kamoa. It was like, can we arrange something? You know, can you send me a review one? Whatever. It took forever. He didn't want to send me one. I now understand why, because it was the most awful instrument. And I think I can say that because they're not making them anymore. But it was like a bad run of these mass-produced instruments out of China. It was like a generic semi-hollow body ukulele that this factory would make for anybody who bought them. They would just, you know, put the label on the headstock and on the sticker on the inside, basically. And it could be for Kamoa, it could be for Koaloha. If you pay the money, they'll build it for you, kind of thing. But it was a bad batch, and they would not stay in tune. Like, you could put strings on a piece of linoleum, and it would probably be easier to tune and more stable. It was really awful. But I got this ukulele, and it was new, and it was like this electric ukulele, and it was so cool. And I had some pedals to, like, you know, make it sound cool, I guess. And I was stoked on it. I was stoked. But there was also a little voice in my brain. It's like, it's not staying in tune. You're not playing in tune. It doesn't sound very good because you're not in tune. And so I played this ukulele at one of the Kehlani gigs, and we went out for, or maybe it wasn't Kehlani, because we went out for lunch afterwards. Usually at the Kehlani, they would make us a full spread at the restaurant downstairs. They would like have this whole big table, and they would bring course after course after course of this amazing food. And we're just like all these ratty bum 18, 19, you know, just college kids. And we were over the moon. We felt like kings and queens. It was really, really a fun experience. But this is not one of those, because we went out to lunch after the gig, and we were sitting around the table, and Uncle George, he looks at me and he says, "Bruh, I hate to tell you this, but your ukulele sounds like shit." And it was so memorable, because it was like, he felt so bad telling me, but it's like, God, somebody's got to tell this kid that this ukulele just is not working. It's not working at all. I was like, oh, okay, uncle. It's like, you know, a slap in the face in the moment. But then the little voice in my head was like, I told you, I knew it. I knew it. It was not a good idea. And yeah, that was the last time that I played out with that ukulele. And yeah, it was just classic. But it was one of those moments where it was like, okay, That's the truth from somebody that I trust, who I know has a good read on these things. He wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. So it must be true. So I have to decide what to do from here with that information. And I decided I'm not going to play it again. It just stayed in the case until I came home after school. And then I think I sold it to some guy here on the coast. Poor dude. I told him, I was trying to be as transparent as possible. I might have even given it to him. I can't remember. But yeah, good stuff. That's the kind of thing that has made me who I am. And I'm just so grateful for all those moments with Uncle George and the feedback that he gave, and, you know, everybody who has given feedback and advice and mentorship over the years. That's just priceless. It is literally priceless, because even folks who, you know, they pay the workshop fee or whatever, a lot of times that's a different experience, because folks come for a good time. It's positive. It's always like that upper kind of thing, like, oh yeah, let's jam. It's like the workshop is, and I mean, I don't say this at all to detract from the learning that happens at the workshop whatsoever, but it is a little bit of a, it's like a host experience. You want to make it a nice thing for everybody. So you might not be as loose with your critiques as he would have been at that point when we were in school. Because we were hanging out all the time and see him a couple of times a week. We'd go out to the farm. We would help him in the garden. We would just hang out. We'd cook lunch. We would just like be there. We were just part of the crew. And I think that it was a lot to do with that relationship that, you know, freed Uncle up to be that a little bit more hardline mentor in certain situations than if I was like, oh, I'm going to my ukulele lesson once a week. And it's just a little bit of a different dynamic. And I super appreciate it. And I look back fondly on that year and a half we were in IHM. I resented it a lot at the time. I really wanted to come home, but also it was some of the best in the trenches time that I've spent. Just, I would have had to do a lot more work if I had never done that. A lot more learning, a lot more kind of on the job training. It would have taken so much longer because we were just playing so many gigs all the time, and we had the feedback coming in from Uncle George. We had a pretty much a different artist in Hawaiian music come through class once a week. We had our applied music class, and there would be some sort of like, oh, you know, Haoli, why don't you play this song you're working on? And then they can like hear it and then give feedback. And that was like kind of the structure of the class. It was like they would talk for a while and then we would share what we've been working on and we would get feedback on that. So there was always this feedback coming in and just kind of that bulk download year and a half of being at the Institute of Hawaiian Music it just sped up that process so much. And if I was left here to my own devices, I'd still be learning a lot of those lessons, I think, just because you got to get them out of the way just by doing it and figuring it out. And, you know, it's truly was a blessing. Mahalo, Uncle Jim Kane, for bringing me the application to sign up and move to Maui for the Institute of Hawaiian Music. Anyways, thanks to Brother Nick for bringing that up the other day and making me kind of reminisce about some of those stories and those times, and just bring it to top of mind that this is a good thing to talk about on the podcast, I think, and to encourage people, you know, don't put up your shields. It's not always a you problem, but you know, when it is, it's in your power to do something about it. It's data. You can work on it. You can improve, and it will make you a better person and a better musician if you can find ways to kind of persevere and react positively to those kinds of critiques and feedbacks. Anyways, I think that's mostly what I wanted to share. Thank you for tuning in, hanging out, listening. A little bit more of a talk story day today. I don't have anything in the hopper so much. I mean, I've always got things like this that I like to talk about and share with folks. But as far as interviews go, it's a little sparse right now, but I'm hoping that come the end of May, beginning of June, when workshop time rolls around again, and I go back to Maui for Uncle George's workshop, that I will be able to collect 3, 4, maybe even 5 new interviews with some of the staff that's going to be there. If you haven't heard, you're not aware, Uncle George Kahumoku Slack Key and Ukulele Workshop happens on Maui. I can look at the dates right here. May 29th to June 5th are the dates this year. The tentative instructor lineup for ukulele includes Brian Tolentino, Daniel Ho, George Kahumoku Jr., of course. Uncle Led does some ukulele stuff. Jeff Peterson does ukulele stuff. Kimo Hussey, Jason Jerome, and myself. So it's always a great time of learning and, you know, getting your hands a little bit dirty with Hawaiian culture kinds of stuff. There's hula dancing, Hawaiian language, coconut weaving, that kinds of thing. And yeah, it's at a lovely spot on the west side. And so, yeah, if you're interested in checking it out, you can go to kahumoku.com/workshops. But bottom line is there's some new faces in town, and I'm going to try and pin them down for some interviews and talk story and bring you folks some more insight here on the Live Ukulele Podcast. Anyways, that's it from me for this time. Catch you next time. Subscribe, leave a review, all that kinds of stuff. Google Podcasts closed its windows the other day, which was kind of sad because that's what I used for organizing podcasts on my phone. It was really great. I don't know why they canceled it. But now you're down to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I think the Google replacement for podcasts is YouTube, which seems kind of dumb to me. But if you're a YouTube person, I'm a YouTube person and I don't do podcasts on there. Whatever. You can go to liveukulele.com/podcast and listen there. No BS required. What you see is what you get. It's right there on the page. Otherwise, you know, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Catch you next time. Ahui ho.